They've seen similar conditions, but nothing as extreme as they have been thus far with the number of acres burned.
Fire crews battle lightning and wind-driven wildfires. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 31st of May. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska veterans celebrate the new VA facility in Anchorage.
They just like coming in. It's a little bit of a healing just walking through the door, walking in the building.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Wildfires continue to rage in the interior due to hot, dry weather, lightning, and erratic winds. Over 80 active fires are charring thousands of acres a day and spreading smoke across the region. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Air tankers roar through smoke-hazed skies. It's summer in the interior, a few weeks earlier than normal. 261 fires have already burned over 260,000 acres, mostly in the interior so far this season. Alaska Fire Service spokesman Doug Stockdale says longtime agency employees say the weather isn't unprecedented, but the fire activity is unusual.
They've seen similar conditions, but nothing as extreme as they have been thus far with the number of acres burned.
Alaska firefighting agencies have had to tap Lower 48 and Canadian crews and aircraft early to deal with the intense activity. They're busy jumping on fresh lightning and human-caused starts in populated places daily while trying to cope with rapid growth of lower priority backcountry fires. Fire Information Officer Pete Buist describes the fire behavior as extreme.
Large flame lengths, you know, more than 100 feet in some places. Rapid movement of fires, particularly with some of the erratic winds that we've been having in the evening. We've had fires that moved, you know, a mile or two an hour, spotting a quarter to a half mile, sometimes up to a mile ahead of the main fire.
Buist says firefighters don't have a lot of options in the face of large advancing wildfires.
It's really not safe to put people in front of a fire that's behaving that way. And so what we end up doing is backing off, fighting fire where we can, and then waiting until things cool down.
That could happen later this week. National Weather Service meteorologist Scott Berg in Fairbanks says a gradual cooling trend is expected.
We have a frontal system that's working its way down from the Arctic over the next several days, and we'll see slightly cooler temperatures in the interior and a little bit more moist, so we won't have as significant fire danger as we've had in the last a week or 10 days.
While humidity is forecast to rise, Berg says there's no significant rain in the forecast. That means large established fires won't be going out. The Toklat fire, burning southwest of Nenana for weeks now, has crested 100,000 acres as over 100 firefighters work to protect remote properties and cabins. Over 500 people are on the Eagle Trail fire near Toke. The top priority blaze that almost overran the village of Tanacross last week has charred over 8,000 acres. Fire Information Officer Celeste Prescott says it's been putting up a lot of smoke.
The smoke is getting fairly thick, and there is some ash fall. Not only in Tanagras, but also in Toke.
Prescott says firefighters are working to keep flames away from the Alaska Highway, secure lines established around Tanacross, and to protect remote cabins in the historic Mansfield Village site. Two large fires northwest of Fairbanks have burned over 25,000 acres off the Elliott Highway in recent days. The state's Buist says one of the fires made a significant advance Sunday.
The Applegate fire, which is pretty much in limited suppression over northeast of Manly, made a run at and burned into Eureka, and a number of buildings were saved, but that fire got across the Elliott Highway in the vicinity of Eureka in several places.
The Applegate and Cascaden Ridge fires have forced closures along the Elliott Highway. Another priority fire continues to grow near Delta Junction. Over 100 firefighters are working the 15,000-acre Gills Creek blaze along the access road to the Pogo Gold Mine, where crews are trying to protect power lines in the face of fast-advancing flames. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
A fire near Iklutna Lake in south-central Alaska was burning on only about 30 acres until yesterday, when Fire Information Officer Pete Buist says the blaze gave firefighters some trouble, making a significant run to the northwest, exhibiting fire activity seldom seen in south-central.
Including backing ground fire, spotting active ground fire, and it actually crossed some of the control line that had been put in before and burned across the road that we're using to access the fire. So personnel were pulled off the fire and flown out of the fire area by helicopter. They plan to go back in today to pick up gear and see what they can do to work on the fire if they're able in terms of fire behavior.
The fire is estimated at about 300 acres currently. Buist says about 70 firefighters will fight the blaze. Six candidates for governor faced off in a debate Friday night in Kodiak, which was intended to be fisheries only, but occasionally strayed into oil and gas issues. The fisheries debate is a 20-year tradition in Alaska's largest fishing port. The three Republicans, Sean Parnell, Ralph Samuels, and Bill Walker, introduced themselves to the commercial fisheries audience.
Our administration has been active in pursuing fisheries policy. We've increased investments in management, research, and marketing. You can count on me to be aggressive when it comes to fighting Endangered Species Act listings and critical habitat areas where we don't have a strong enough voice.
Seafood is going to be one of the most important roles as we move forward in Alaska in an era where oil will run out. The seafood is going to be the most sustainable resource that we have.
I'm running for governor because I'm very concerned about our future. I'm very concerned we're running out of oil. 90% of our income is based upon oil through a pipeline that is two-thirds empty.
The three Democrats made their pitches, first Ethan Berkowitz, then Hollis French, and Bob Poe.
Look around you and see what's going on in the commercial fishing world. If we don't require some kind of change, boots on the deck, if we don't require some kind of ownership interest, we're going to continue to see a loss of fishing jobs and a loss of fishing opportunities.
I will establish a rotating group of advisors who are Alaskans, active in the industry, to advise me on commercial fishing policy.
I also know how to create jobs. For instance, in seafood, when I was international trade director, I helped expand exports from $1.2 billion to $3.6 billion while I was there.
The idea of fin fish farming in Alaska proved universally unpopular, as expressed by Walker, Parnell, and Berkowitz.
It scares me to death to think the federal government is going to come in and do a farm fish a project off of the waters of Alaska. I think they would be about as successful as they've helped us with the timber industry in Southeast. I think it would be a complete disaster.
I oppose, and on my watch, nearshore and offshore aquaculture will not happen. We don't need to be raising Atlantic salmon in Alaska waters. I do, however, support improving our efforts towards a shellfish mariculture industry.
Real Alaskans don't eat farm fish. And we don't eat farm fish because it tastes like mush. And because it drives Alaskan fishermen out of business. And our brand here is for wild stock, wild fish. That's what we sell. It's better, and it's better for you. I mean, look what happened to poor Chileans. They invested heavily in farmed salmon. They've had massive crashes down there. It's helping our prices a little bit, but it's not helping their economy.
The candidates addressed the issue of bringing younger people into the industry, especially in light of privatization. Here are Poe, French, and Samuels.
Like all big changes, they also have unintended consequences. And one of those is in Kodiak, where you're starting to see the community that is directly connected with that resource being separated from that resource. And I think that's where catch shares for crew members come into play most dramatically. And so what I would support is looking at community shares.
You always want to reward the hard worker, the early riser, the person who hits the docks and gets out there and can work harder and smarter and tougher than anybody else. That's what we value as Alaskans, what we value as Americans, are people who can do the hard work and get ahead.
There are tremendous opportunities in the seafood industry in this state. If you can become very good at the technology which will be needed for value added into the management, whether it be marketing, whether it be the operations of a processor or a ship, there are a lot of opportunities if we can provide the educational opportunities for a lot of young people in coastal communities.
Berkowitz was the only candidate to come out firmly against the Pebble Mine, which would be situated at the headwaters of the valuable Bristol Bay salmon fishery. Fellow Democrat French said there's no need to rush into developing it right now, while Poe said it should be taxed appropriately if it is built. All three Republicans said they would not trade a renewable resource, such as salmon, for gold or copper, but all defended the permitting process for the mine and want to see what Northern Dynasty's plans actually are. You can hear both hours of the debate online. Links are at our website, aprn.org. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Haines writer Heather Lendy talks about her new book and lessons from others.
I'm really not a hugger, you know. I'm kind of an Episcopalian. This was just like, really?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
Alaska's veterans are celebrating the opening of the new VA healthcare system facility on the outskirts of Anchorage. The clinic started seeing patients on May 10th. At 184,000 square feet, the complex houses medical, dental, mental health, physical therapy, and a wide range of services to help veterans get enrolled for health care benefits and disability. Marcia Hoffman-DeVoe is a spokeswoman for the Alaska VA. She says when a veteran checks in for appointments, they're directed to one of four waiting areas that serves all physical and mental health appointments.
Takes away some of that stigma of having to go to a separate area that's saying I'm waiting for a mental health appointment, which sometimes, you know, people avoid going to that area for the help that they need then because they feel like I don't want somebody to know I'm going for mental health treatment. And here it's a very normal part of what we do. All of our veterans are screened, you know, for not only physical health problems but for mental health problems as well. That's just all part of the package of what we provide.
Hoffman-DeVoe says VA services in Alaska have grown from small rented spaces to the new full-service outpatient clinic and regional office on Muldoon Road. Alaska has more vets than any other state, and Hoffman-DeVoe says the VA wants to bring services to where the majority of vets live in Alaska.
We've added those strategically to follow the population centers of veterans. So Fairbanks was added first, and then Kenai, and the Matsu has been open just over a year. We're serving over 900 veterans in that clinic right now. And then the outreach clinic in Juneau is about, is under construction right now, and that'll be our clinical care site down in southeast Alaska.
She says there's also a program in roadless areas.
The pilot that we have going right now with five different sites, Bethel area, Dillingham area, Kotzebue, Nome area, and Cordova, is authorizing primary care and mental health services to either the community health clinics or to the Alaska Native Tribal Health corporations in those areas.
The new Anchorage facility features two floors. The main floor has primary care waiting areas, mental health services, business offices, and people who can assist vets with enrollment. The second floor has dental, physical therapy, and rehabilitation services.
Our vocational rehabilitation and employment services are also in this building, along with representatives from four of the different service organizations. So the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Disabled American Veterans, and the Military Order of the Purple Heart all have certified service officers here, and they can help veterans with applications and claims that they are making for disability compensation.
Gladstone Shaw is retired from the Air Force after 24 years. He served in Korea and Vietnam. He praised the new facility and says he still walks the halls in amazement. He says the VA's healthcare has undergone an evolution in the last 30 years, from a time when problems such as post-traumatic stress disorder were not understood and some soldiers were really suffering.
They're in pretty bad shape. Sometimes not even recognized by people. What is post-traumatic stress disorder? You know, this, they used to say, well, all these veterans, it's just, oh, they just come back there. They're not crazy. They just act like it. That sort of, I heard a lot of that.
Shaw has home health appointments through the VA, but comes to the news center once a week for meetings with the Blind Veterans Group. Alaska artwork is showcased throughout the facility. The entry to the new building features a high, airy ceiling with metal sculptures of sandhill cranes floating overhead. Mr. Shaw says, although it can't be charted, there's something uplifting about walking through the door.
It's one of the things that I noticed in just out in the hallways, the entryway with the veterans out there. Is just, they just like coming in. It's a little bit of a healing just walking through the door, walking in the building.
The new center has a $110 million yearly operating budget and 350 employees. The VA has 500 employees working statewide. Members of the Alaska Native Veterans Association have unveiled a statue honoring the Alaska Territorial Guard. Association members presented the bronze statue Saturday at the Veterans Memorial in Fairbanks. The largely Native militia served during World War II, assigned to guard Alaska from the Japanese. Two climbers from Canada have died in an avalanche in Denali National Park and Preserve. Park officials say 39-year-old Canadian Andrew Herzenberg and 42-year-old Israeli Avner Magan were descending a steep gully of Ruth Gorge on Saturday when they were swept up by the avalanche. Both men were residents of Toronto, Ontario. Officials say other climbers witnessed the avalanche and skied closer to the site. In the debris, the climber saw what appeared to be two people and gear and called rangers with a satellite phone. The bodies of the two men were recovered yesterday morning. Alaska senators say rural Alaskans hunting birds for subsistence should not have to get a federal permit. U.S. Fish and Wildlife is requiring the duck stamps for hunting or gathering birds' eggs. The $15 permits are used throughout the country, but Alaskan subsistence hunters have long gotten an exemption that is now ending. Fish and Wildlife is starting enforcement and ticketing this spring. Senators Mark Begich and Lisa Murkowski have introduced legislation in Washington to counter that. It would remove the requirement for Alaska's subsistence users. Senator Murkowski says the duck stamps are not traditional practice for Alaska's hunters.
What we're seeing is stepped up enforcement by Fish and Wildlife to enforce regardless of what has happened historically. And so if we can't get the assistance just from within the agency, we feel it's important enough to those who are subsistence users to put in law that they would be exempt from the duck stamp provisions.
Earlier this month, Senator Begich wrote to Interior Secretary Ken Salazar asking him to review the duck stamp requirement. In 2001, the Interior Department's regional solicitor in Alaska found that subsistence hunters should be made to buy and carry the stamps. But Begich says that's a hardship and not realistic in rural Alaska.
Already it's a limited cash economy out there. To have them expend a resource on a stamp that is really, in my view, a partial violation of the agreement the United States has with Canada, allowing for the taking of birds and eggs without a stamp, I think is problematic. So we're hopefully trying to resolve this. I'd love the administration to resolve it, but if they're not willing to do it, then I think legislatively we have to take some action.
Groups including the Alaska Federation of Natives and the Association of Village Council Presidents are advocating to get the duck stamp requirement removed. The senator's bill now goes to the Environment Committee in the Senate.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
The state of Alaska is suing the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service over predator control on Unimak Island. The state filed suit on Friday, seeking a court order to allow it to go ahead with plans to kill 7 wolves in the federal refuge. 7 is the minimum number state biologists say will need to be eliminated to maintain the Unimak Island caribou herd at depleted levels. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says if the Alaska Department of Fish and Game goes ahead with its plan to conduct aerial predator control inside the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge, it will consider those state employees trespassers and file complaints with the U.S. Attorney. Five years ago, Haynes author Heather Lendy was supposed to be on tour promoting her first book. Instead, she was recovering from a horrific bike accident that crushed her pelvis. The local grocery store manager didn't see her at an intersection and ran her over with his truck. Now she's fully recovered and beginning a tour for her newest collection of essays, Take Good Care of the Garden and the Dogs. She begins the book talking about the accident, but quickly moves on to other stories. Lendy says it was a good way to explore what she learned in the healing process.
I focused on other people in Haynes that had, you know, that believed certain things healed them and why. And so I write about Tim June, that some people might know him as a sort of an environmental activist, and the reason is that he had cancer when he was a young man, and he walked away from his cancer treatments and came to Alaska thinking that he would either die or get better, and he's, you know, in his 50s now and better. And so he really believes the environment healed him, and thus that changed the way he lived. And I write about Wayne Price, who carved a totem pole that he believed will help heal what ails some of the things in the Tlingit culture, but really in all of Alaskan culture, you know, the issues of violence and alcohol addiction and some of those things. And the pole worked for a lot of people, and it continues to. You know, when you see it, the title works. You know, the title is You're Going to Be Well, or the name of the pole is You Are Going to Get Well. And when you see it standing there in front of the Mount Edgecombe Hospital in Sitka, something good happens to you. So, you know, those kind of things were things that I could look at as time went on and sort of try to figure out what makes other people tick. Why do some people get better? Not necessarily, I didn't really look into why some people don't, but I kind of looked at what happens with people and how our faith or our belief in certain things helps us.
On your blog, you talk about how important the Hickel family was in your recovery and also in your ability to forgive the man who ran over you. Can you share that story with us?
Yeah, I didn't, I write about it in the book, but I didn't want to say anything in the book because I didn't want to be like name dropping, you know, Alaskans. But Mrs. Hickel, Ermalee, she always says to call her Ermalee. I still call her Mrs. Hickel. I'm not a close friend of the family or anything, but Ermalee used to read my daily news column and send me little notes. And when I was here reading about the first book, she raised her hand and asked me if I had seen Kevin, you know, the guy that ran me over. And I had said no, you know, that I hadn't really. I mean, I said hi and everything. And I told her, you know, I forgave him and there was no issues really. And then she wrote me a note. She wrote me a nice little letter. And she told me to go to the grocery store and give Kevin a big hug. And that was what I needed to do. And I'm really not a hugger, you know. I'm kind of an Episcopalian. This was just like, really? And then but the more I thought about it, I you know, she was right, and so that moment happened, and it was really a good thing to do, and I'm glad that I did it, and I'm glad that such a wise, good woman talked me into doing that. And also, there was a really great one that when I was hurt, she also wrote me and said that one way to make myself feel good, even when I was lying in bed, was to raise my arms up and say, hip, hip, hooray, hip, hip, hooray, today is a wonderful day. And she said that she and Governor Hickel did that every morning to start the day. And she said, trust me, this will make you feel happy just thinking of us doing it. And it did. See, it's making you happy now. I mean, it just makes you laugh, doesn't it? It's like a wonderful image of them doing this. And I believe it. And it may, and I used it, and it made me feel better every day.
In the midst of your recovery, your mother's cancer got worse. What was it like to still be recovering yourself while you needed to take care of someone else, especially your mom?
It was really a challenge. I mean, it was really hard. And again, though, I think it's one of the things that helped me get better, because the surest way, I think, to recover from things, to do things physically, to say, you know, not sort of say, well, I'm tired, I got to go to bed now, is when you're caring for other people, thinking, I can't fly across the country. I can't sit for half an hour. It hurts. Well, I've got to get on a plane to New York, you know, again, and then come back again. And then, you know, and you just do it. And I think when I was throughout the whole process, people said to me, oh, you know, you were so brave and you did all these, how did you do it? And I said, well, what choice do you have, really? I mean, you have to. And I think by having to, then you get well, or at least I did. And in the type of injuries that I had, my mom also really wanted to get better, and that just didn't happen. You know, so it's not like that. I'm not saying just because I had this willpower, it happened, but all those kind of questions come up throughout the book. There's just sort of a thread of, gee, how come?
When your first book came out, the accident canceled your book tour. So what's it like to be heading out on a tour this time around?
I'm driving very carefully now that I'm in Anchorage. I keep sort of waiting for a safe to fall on my head. I've been a little nervous about the whole thing, actually. I wasn't going to ride my bicycle at all until after it got over. And I have been, but only with my husband at like 5 o'clock in the morning. so it's different. And this book is a much more intimate book. The other thing, too, I realize is I think as a, you know, experienced author of all of two books, the first one was so exciting, like I thought it was going to change my life. And it didn't really. Actually, some really bad things happened. So now the second one, I don't have as much invested in it, I guess. I do and I don't. It's exciting and it makes me happy, but it's exciting and makes me happy at home. It's not just going out and doing the tour thing, which before was a bigger deal to me. And then I didn't get to have it happen anyway. So there's some kind of big lesson there.
Heather Lendy's new book is called Take Good Care of the Garden and the Dogs. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks and Jay Barrett in Kodiak. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. In Alaska, more than 2,000 children are in need of foster homes, and more than 1,200 of those children are Alaska Native. These children need homes where they can learn who they are. Alaska Native foster homes can help pass on traditions, arts, and culture. Help keep Alaska's children safe and their heritage strong. Learn more at 800-478-7307. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.